Chapter 39. Weaving of the Web. Rand looked down on the crowds from the high window of his room in the Queen's Blessing. They ran shouting along the street, all streaming in the same direction, waving pennants and banners, the white line standing guard in a thousand fields of red. Camelinners and Outlanders, they ran together, and for a change no one appeared to want to bash anyone else's head. Today, maybe, there was only one faction. He turned from the window, grinning. Next to the day when Egwene and Perrin walked in, alive and laughing over what they had seen, this was the day he had been waiting for most. "Are you coming?" he asked again. Matt glowered from where he lay curled up in a ball on his bed. "Take that Trolloc you're so friendly with." "Blood and ashes, Matt, he's not a Trolloc. You're just being stubborn stupid. How many times do you want to have this argument? Light, it's not as if you'd never heard of Ogier before." "I never heard they look like Trollocs." Matt pushed his face into his pillow and curled himself tighter. "Stubborn, stupid," Rand muttered. "How long are you going to hide up here? I'm not going to keep bringing you your meals up all those stairs forever. You could do with a bath, too." Matt shrugged around on the bed as if he were trying to burrow deeper into it. Rand sighed, then went to the door. "Last chance to go together, Matt. I'm leaving now." He closed the door slowly, hoping that Matt would change his mind, but his friend did not stir. The door clicked shut. In the hallway, he leaned against the doorframe. Master Gill said there was an old woman two streets over, Mother Grubb, who sold herbs and poultices besides birthing babies, tending the sick, and telling fortunes. She sounded a little like a wisdom. Nynaeve was who Matt needed, or maybe Moraine, but Mother Grubb was who he had. Bringing her to the Queen's Blessing might bring the wrong kind of attention as well, though, if she would even come. For her, as well as for Matt and him. Herbalists and hedge doctors were lying low in Camelin right now. There was talk against anyone who did any kind of healing or fortune-telling. Every night the dragon's fang was scrawled on doors with a free hand, sometimes even in the daylight, and people might forget who had cured their fevers and poulticed their toothaches when the cry of Dark Friend went up. That was the temper in the city. It was not as if Matt were really sick. He ate everything Rand carried up from the kitchen. He would take nothing from anyone else's hand, though, and never complained about aches or fever. He just refused to leave the room. But Rand had been sure today would bring him out. He settled his cloak on his shoulders and hitched his sword belt around so the sword, and the red cloth wrapped around it, was covered more. At the foot of the stairs, he met Master Gill just starting up.
"There's someone been asking after you in the city,"
the innkeeper said around his pipe. Rand felt a surge of hope.
"Asking after you and those friends of yours by name. You younglings, anyway. Seems to want you three lads most."
Anxiety replaced hope. "Who?" Rand asked. He still could not help glancing up and down the hall. Except for they two, it was empty, from the exit into the alley to the common room door.
"Don't know his name. Just heard about him. I hear most things in Camelin eventually."
"Beggar,"
the innkeeper grunted.
"Half mad, I hear. Even so, he could take the Queen's bounty at the palace, even with things as hard as they are. On high days, the Queen gives it out with her own hands, and there's never anyone turned away for any reason. No one needs to beg in Camelin. Even a man under warrant can't be arrested while he's taking the Queen's bounty."
"A Dark Friend?" Rand said reluctantly. "If the Dark Friends know our names."
"You've got Dark Friends on the brain, young fellow. They're around, certainly, but just because the White Cloaks have everybody stirred up is no reason for you to think the city's full of them. Do you know what rumor those idiots have started now? Strange shapes. Can you believe it? Strange shapes creeping around outside the city in the night."
The innkeeper chuckled till his belly shook. Rand did not feel like laughing. I am Kinch had talked about strange shapes, and there had surely enough been a fade back there.
"What kind of shapes?"
"What kind? I don't know what kind. Strange shapes. Trollocs, probably. The Shadowman. Luz Theron Kinslayer himself come back 50 feet high. What kind of shapes do you think people will imagine now the ideas in their heads? It's none of our worry."
Master Gill eyed him for a moment.
Going out, are you? Well, I can't say I care for it myself, even today. But there's hardly anybody left here but me. Not your friend?
Matt's not feeling very well. Maybe later.
Well, be that as it may. You watch yourself now. Even today, good Queen's men will be outnumbered out there. Like burn the day I ever thought to see it so. Best you leave by the alleyway. There's two of those blood-bedamned traitors sitting across the street watching my front door. They know where I stand by the light.
Rand stuck his head out and looked both ways before slipping into the alley. A bulky man Master Gill had hired stood at the head of the alley, leaning on his spear and watching the people run past with an apparent lack of interest. It was only apparent, Rand knew. The fellow, his name was Lamgwin, saw everything through those heavy-lidded eyes, and for all his bullish bulk, he could move like a cat. He also thought Queen Morgaze was the light made flesh, or near enough. There were a dozen like him scattered around the Queen's Blessing. Lamgwin's ear twitched when Rand reached the mouth of the alley, but he never took his disinterest off the street. Rand knew the man had heard him coming.
Watch your back today, man.
Lamgwin's voice sounded like gravel in a pan.
When the trouble starts, you'll be a handy one to have here. Not somewhere with a knife in your back.
Rand glanced at the blocky man, but his surprise was muted. He always tried to keep the sword out of sight, but this was not the first time one of Master Gill's men had assumed he would know his way in a fight. Lamgwin did not look back at him. The man's job was guarding the inn, and he did it. Pushing his sword back a little further under his cloak, Rand joined the flow of people. He saw the two men the innkeeper had mentioned, standing on upturned barrels across the street from the inn so they could see over the crowd. He did not think they noticed him coming out of the alley. They made no secret of their allegiance. Not only were their swords wrapped in white, tied with red, they wore white armbands and white cockades on their hats. He had not been in Camelon long before learning that red wrappings on a sword, or a red armband or cockade, meant support for Queen Morgaze. White, said the Queen, and her involvement with Aes Sedai and Tar Valon were to blame for everything that had gone wrong. For the weather and the failed crops. Maybe even for the false dragon. He did not want to get involved in Camelon politics. Only it was too late now. It was not just that he had already chosen, by accident, but there it was. Matters in the city had gone beyond letting anyone stay neutral. Even outlanders wore cockades and armbands, or wrapped their swords, and more wore the white than the red. Maybe some of them did not think that way, but they were far from home, and that was the way sentiment was running in Camelon. Men who supported the Queen went about in groups for their own protection when they went out at all. Today, though, it was different. On the surface, at least. Today, Camelon celebrated a victory of the light over the shadow. Today, the false dragon was being brought into the city to be displayed before the Queen before he was taken north to Tar Valon. No one talked about that part of it. No one but the Aes Sedai could deal with a man who could actually wield the One Power, of course, but no one wanted to talk about it. The light had defeated the shadow, and soldiers from Andor had been in the forefront of the battle. For today, that was all that was important. For today, everything else could be forgotten. Or could it? Rand wondered. The crowd ran, singing and waving banners, laughing. But men displaying the red kept together in knots of 10 or 20, and there were no women or children with them. He thought there were at least 10 men showing white for every one proclaiming allegiance to the Queen. Not for the first time he wished white cloth had been the cheaper. But would Master Gill have helped if you'd been showing the white? The crowd was so thick that jostling was inevitable. Even white cloaks did not enjoy their little open spaces in the throng today. As Rand let the crowd carry him toward the inner city, he realized that not all animosities were being reined in. He saw one of the children of the light, one of three, bumped so hard he almost fell. The white cloak barely caught himself and started an angry oath at the man who had bumped him when another man staggered him with a deliberate, aimed shoulder. Before matters could go any further, the white cloak's companions pulled him over to the side of the street to where they could shelter in a doorway. The three seemed caught between their normal glaring stare and disbelief. The crowd streamed on by as if none had noticed, and perhaps none had. No one would have dared do such a thing 2 days earlier. More, Rand realized, the men who had done the bumping wore white cockades on their hats. It was widely believed the White Cloak supported those who opposed the Queen and her Aes Sedai advisor, but that made no difference. Men were doing things of which they had never before thought. Jostling a White Cloak today, tomorrow perhaps pulling down a queen. Suddenly he wished there were a few more men close to him showing red. Jostled by white cockades and armbands, he abruptly felt very alone. The White Cloaks noticed him looking at them and stared back as if meeting a challenge. He let a singing swirl in the crowd sweep him out of their sight and joined in their song. Forward the lion, forward the lion. The white lion takes the field. Roar defiance at the shadow, forward the lion. Forward Andor triumphant. The route that would bring the false dragon into Camelin was well known. Those streets themselves were kept clear by solid lines of the Queen's guards and red-cloaked pikemen, but people packed the edges of them shoulder to shoulder, even the windows and the rooftops. Rand worked his way into the inner city, trying to get closer to the palace. He had some thought of actually seeing Loghain displayed before the Queen. To see the false dragon and a queen, both. That was something he had never dreamed of back home. The inner city was built on hills, and much of what the Ogier had made still remained. Where streets in the new city mostly ran every which way in a crazy quilt, here they followed the curves of the hills as if they were a natural part of the earth. Sweeping rises and dips presented new and surprising vistas at every turn. Parks seen from different angles, even from above, where their walls and monuments made patterns pleasing to the eye, though barely touched with green. Towers suddenly revealed, tile-covered walls glittering in the sunlight with 100 changing colors. Sudden rises where the gaze was thrown out across the entire city to the rolling plains and forests beyond. All in all, it would have been something to see, if not for the crowd that hurried him along before he had a chance to really take it in. And all those curving streets made it impossible to see very far ahead. Abruptly, he was swept around a bend, and there was the palace. The streets, even following the natural contours of the land, had been laid out to spiral in on this. This gleeman's tale of pale spires and golden domes and intricate stonework traceries, with the banner of Andor waving from every prominence, a centerpiece for which all the other vistas had been designed. It seemed more sculpted by an artist than simply built like ordinary buildings. That glimpse showed him he would get no nearer. No one was being allowed close to the palace. Queen's guards made scarlet ranks 10 deep flanking the palace gates. Along the tops of the white walls, on high balconies and towers, more guards stood rigidly straight, bows precisely slanted across the breastplated chests. They, too, looked like something out of a gleeman's tale, a guard of honor. But Rand did not believe that was why they were there. The clamoring crowd lining the streets was almost solid with white-wrapped swords, white armbands, and white cockades. Only here and there was the white wall broken by a knot of red. The red-uniformed guards seemed a thin barrier against all that white. Giving up on making his way closer to the palace, he sought a place where he could use his height to advantage. He did not have to be in the front row to see everything. The crowd shifted constantly, people shoving to get nearer the front, people hurrying off to what they thought was a better vantage point. In one of those shifts, he found himself only 3 people from the open street, and all in front of him were shorter than he, including the pikemen. Almost everyone was. People crowded against him from both sides, sweating from the press of so many bodies. Those behind him muttered about not being able to see and tried to wriggle past. He stood his ground, making an impervious wall with those to either side. He was content. When the false dragon passed by, he would be close enough to see the man's face clearly. Across the street and down toward the gates to the new city, a ripple passed through the tight-packed crowd. Around the curve, an eddy of people was drawing back to let something go by. It was not like the clear space that followed the white cloaks on any day but today. These people jerked themselves back with startled glances that became grimaces of distaste. Pressing themselves out of the way, they turned their faces from whatever it was, but watched out of the corners of their eyes until it was past. Other eyes around him noted the disturbance too. Keyed for the coming of the dragon, but with nothing to do now but wait, the crowd found anything at all worthy of comment. He heard speculation ranging from an Aes Sedai to Loghain himself, and a few coarser suggestions that brought rough laughter from the men and disdainful sniffs from the women. The ripple meandered through the crowd, drawing closer to the edge of the street as it came. No one seemed to hesitate in letting it go where it wanted, even if that meant losing a good spot for viewing as the crowd flowed back in on itself behind the passing. Finally, directly across from Rand, the crowd bulged into the street, pushing aside red-cloaked pikemen who struggled to shove them back, and broke open. The stooped shape that shuffled hesitantly out into the open looked more like a pile of filthy rags than a man. Rand heard murmurs of disgust around him. The ragged man paused on the far edge of the street. His cowl, torn and stiff with dirt, swung back and forth as if searching for something or listening. Abruptly, he gave a wordless cry and flung out a dirty claw of a hand, pointing straight at Rand. Immediately, he began to scuttle across the street like a bug. The beggar. Whatever ill chance had led the man to find him like this, Rand was suddenly sure that, dark friend or not, he did not want to meet him face to face. He could feel the beggar's eyes, like greasy water on his skin. Especially he did not want the man close to him here, surrounded by people balanced on the brink of violence. The same voices that had laughed before now cursed him as he pushed his way back, away from the street. He hurried, knowing the densely packed mass through which he had to shove and wriggle would give way before the filthy man. Struggling to force a path through the crowd, he staggered and almost fell when he abruptly broke free. Flailing his arms to keep his balance, he turned the stagger into a run. People pointed at him. He was the only one not pressing the other way, and running at that. Shouts followed him. His cloak flapped behind him, exposing his red-clad sword. When he realized that, he ran faster. A lone supporter of the Queen, running, could well spark a white-cockaded mob to pursuit, even today. He ran, letting his long legs eat paving stones. Not until the shouts were left far behind did he allow himself to collapse against a wall, panting. He did not know where he was, except that he was still within the inner city. He could not remember how many twists and turns he had taken along those curving streets. Poised to run again, he looked back the way he had come. Only one person moved on the street, a woman walking placidly along with her shopping basket. Almost everyone in the city was gathered for a glimpse of the false dragon. He can't have followed me. I must have left him behind. The beggar would not give up, he was sure of it, though he could not say why. That ragged shape would be working its way through the crowds at that very minute, searching, and if Rand returned to see Loghain, he ran the risk of a meeting. For a moment he considered going back to the Queen's blessing, but he was sure he would never get another chance to see a queen, and he hoped he would never have another to see a false dragon. There seemed to be something cowardly in letting a bent beggar, even a dark friend, chase him into hiding. He looked around, considering. The way the inner city was laid out, buildings were kept low, if there were buildings at all, so that someone standing at a particular spot would have nothing to interrupt the planned view. There had to be places from where he could see the procession pass with the false dragon. Even if he could not see the queen, he could see Loghain. Suddenly determined, he set off. In the next hour, he found several such places, every last one already packed cheek to cheek with people avoiding the crush along the procession route. They were a solid front of white cockades and armbands. No red at all. Thinking what the sight of his sword might do in a crowd like that, he slipped away carefully and quickly. Shouting floated up from the new city, cries and the blaring of trumpets, the martial beat of drums. Loghain and his escort were already in Camelin, already on the way to the palace. Dispirited, he wandered the all but empty streets, still half-heartedly hoping to find some way to see Loghain. His eyes fell on the slope, bare of buildings, rising above the street where he was walking. In a normal spring, the slope would have been an expanse of flowers and grass, but now it was brown all the way to the high wall along its crest, a wall over which the tops of trees were visible. This part of the street had not been designed for any grand view, but just ahead, over the rooftops, he could see some of the palace spires topped by white lion banners fluttering in the wind. He was not sure exactly where the curve of the street ran after it rounded the hill beyond his sight, but he suddenly had a thought about that hilltop wall. The drums and trumpets were drawing nearer, the shouting growing louder. Anxiously, he scrambled up the slope. It was not meant to be climbed, but he dug his boots into the dead sod and pulled himself up, using leafless shrubs as handholds. Panting as much with desire as effort, he scrambled the last yards to the wall. It reared above him, easily twice his height and more. The air thundered with the drumbeat, rang with trumpet blasts. The face of the wall had been left much in the natural state of the stone, the huge blocks fitted together so well that the joints were nearly invisible, the roughness making it seem almost a natural cliff. Rand grinned. The cliffs just beyond the sandhills were higher, and even Perrin had climbed those. His hand sought rocky knobs, his booted feet found ridges. The drums raced him as he climbed. He refused to let them win. He would reach the top before they reached the palace. In his haste, the stone tore his hands and scraped his knees through his breeches, but he flung his arms over the top and heaved himself up with a sense of victory. Hastily, he twisted himself around to a seat on the flat, narrow top of the wall. The leafy branches of a towering tree stuck out over his head, but he had no thought for that. He looked across tiled rooftops, but from the wall, his line of sight was clear. He leaned out just a little and could see the palace gate and the queen's guards drawn up there, and the expectant crowd. Expectant. Their shouts drowned out by the thunder of drums and trumpets, but waiting still. He grinned. I won. Even as he settled in place, the first part of the procession rounded the final curve before the palace. 20 ranks of trumpeters came first, splitting the air with peal after triumphant peal, a fanfare of victory. Behind them, as many drummers thundered. Then came the banners of Camelin, white lions on red, borne by mounted men, followed by the soldiers of Camelin, rank on rank on rank of horsemen, armor gleaming, lances proudly held, crimson pennants fluttering. Treble rows of pikemen and archers flanked them, and came on and on after the horsemen began passing between the waiting guards and through the palace gates. The last of the foot soldiers rounded the curve, and behind them was a massive wagon. 16 horses pulled it in hitches of 4. In the center of its flat bed was a large cage of iron bars, and on each corner of the wagon bed sat 2 women, watching the cage as intently as if the procession and the crowd did not exist. Aes Sedai, he was certain. Between the wagon and the footman, and to either side, rode a dozen warders, their cloaks swirling and tangling the eye. If the Aes Sedai ignored the crowd, the warders scanned it as if there were no other guards but they. With all of that, it was the man in the cage who caught and held Rand's eyes. He was not close enough to see Loghain's face, as he wanted to, but suddenly he thought he was as close as he cared for. The false dragon was a tall man, with long, dark hair curling around his broad shoulders. He held himself upright against the sway of the wagon with one hand on the bars over his head. His clothes seemed ordinary, a cloak and coat and breeches that would have not caused comment in any farming village. But the way he wore them, the way he held himself. Loghain was a king in every inch of him. The cage might as well not have been there. He held himself erect, head high, and looked over the crowd as if they had come to do him honor. And wherever his gaze swept, there the people fell silent, staring back in awe. When Loghain's eyes left them, they screamed with redoubled fury as if to make up for their silence, but it made no difference in the way the man stood, or in the silence that passed along with him. As the wagon rolled through the palace gates, he turned to look back at the assembled masses. They howled at him, beyond words, a wave of sheer animal hate and fear, and Loghain threw back his head and laughed as the palace swallowed him. Other contingents followed behind the wagons, with banners representing more who had fought and defeated the false dragon. The golden bees of Ilion, the 3 white crescents of Tyr, the rising sun of Carrion, others, many others, of nations and of cities, and of great men with their own trumpets, their own drums, to thunder their grandeur. It was anticlimactic after Loghain. Rand leaned out a bit further to try to catch one last sight of the caged man. He was defeated, wasn't he? Light, he wouldn't be in a bloody cage if he wasn't defeated. Overbalanced, he slipped and grabbed at the top of the wall, pulled himself back to a somewhat safer seat. With Loghain gone, he became aware of the burning in his hands, where the stone had scraped his palms and fingers. Yet he could not shake free of the images. The cage and the Aes Sedai. Loghain undefeated. No matter the cage, that had not been a defeated man. He shivered and rubbed his stinging hands on his thighs. Why were the Aes Sedai watching him? He wondered aloud.
They're keeping him from touching the true source, silly.
He jerked to look up toward the girl's voice, and suddenly his precarious seat was gone. He had only time to realize that he was toppling backward, falling, when something struck his head, and a laughing Loghain chased him into spinning darkness.